Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan, service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think funny is just like the reduced, if you take a serious thing down to its barest components and suck the fat out of it, which is sort of what stand-up comedy is like getting in punchline to punchline in the shortest number of words. That's not all comedy, but that's like a big part of it. I think what you're left with at some point of simmering down the idea is like something funny. Like in the way that, I don't know. Like I was like, like St. Augustine is funny all the time. Like every page, there's a joke. And Thomas Aquinas is just almost never funny. And sometimes it'll be the same. You know, like there's just, if you reduce it, I think, yeah, brevity is the source of wit, is the fancy, is the short, funny way of saying that. But I think that's the, it, but it's hard because if you have to have that much content and that many issues and take like, you know, go into detail and not just get to do all the flourishes. I imagine you'd get terribly bogged down, but it seems to be working. I mean, maybe there's enough comedians out there, and you got to get, you got to be serious in the culture war.
Welcome to The Crunch. We got James McCann here on the show on his huge media tour for his special Hey America out on Matt and Shane's Secret Podcast YouTube channel. Already a quarter of a million views, James, on the on the special. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was meant to be an hour, and then I had a massive panic and I had raw milk poisoning, and I cut it down to 18 minutes and I thought I'll record it later. I'll do it again. I had a weird dark night of the soul.
What do you mean?
It's all good.
You had raw milk poisoning when it was being edited or when you were performing?
Yeah, it was being edited, and I had raw milk poisoning while I was looking at the final cut, and I was like, ah, it's all terrible. I suck. Make it as short as possible, and I'll do it again. I'll do it better. I'll be better.
At that point, why not just delay it? You know, why put out 18 minutes?
I have to hit the road. I have to go and do shows and have people have some semblance of knowing who I am. It's devastating.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Mercy, man, I tell you what. I mean, the big stretch of it was about homelessness, and I wanted to talk about that because it was really hard to write that bit and to get it not just be an anti-homeless people bit. And I thought, considering the, what's it called? Ordo Amoris?
Yeah.
The Ordo Amoris, yeah.
Yeah, it might be worth discussing because it's like, I've had a lot of trouble with the homeless in America thus far in terms of being over-involved. And there was a guy who kept coming to my house, and I was doing too much with him, and it was scary to the family. I don't know, it's like, what do we, like, we owe charity to our neighbor and the Samaritan and the guy who's like probably on hard drugs in the park by the house who keeps coming over. So it's like, what, and like it occurred to me that is the answer to the homelessness crisis, is just like loving people, right? It's like being in their lives and then being in your life. But then as a husband and father, that's quite difficult to navigate, to expose one's family to those same dangers. So it's like, and I think America is a much more Christian country than places that don't have a visible homelessness problem. Like in terms of the heart of people and how they're acting. You know what I mean? I find it complicated. I find it to be like a difficult, like it is, it's an affront to have so many opportunities for charity all of the time and to see people who are genuinely in need. And not to be, it's weird to me coming from a country where that doesn't happen. We've got like three homeless guys and you know their names and stuff.
I mean, you said this in the special. It is truly the land of opportunity. If you want to be a drugged out heroin addict on this, you can do that. And it's unfortunate.
Yes, but I feel like you've got a culture where a lot of people choose that or like have it fostered upon them. I know there are definitely like people who are unhoused. I was unhoused for a stretch of time when we were living out of the van, traveling across the country, and we didn't know where we were going to go. But I think there are also people ensnared by vice in a hard way. Like you just let people go.
You seriously only have like 3 homeless people in Australia? Like where do you put it?
That's an overstatement. That's an overstatement. But it's like, it's so tiny by comparison. Huh. It's like to go to an intersection and have a homeless person there is every intersection in Austin. There's a guy with a sign.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're driving through,
that is also like in a big being in a big city, though. That's another thing is like a city that has a population above, I think, like 500,000. You'll see that. Actually, I don't know. In Melbourne, it's pretty bad here too. Actually, now that I think about it,
it seems like something is causing it to go up. Like it feels like it's not. Mm-hmm. Is it institution? Like I think monasteries are the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think monasteries are the answer for almost everything, but like just to get
that's probably true. Actually,
get a bunch of the lads together to sort something out,
and they have
because then you have a place to go. You're a homeless guy, you're down on your luck. You go knock on the monastery door. The porter answers you. He's like, "Yeah, you can live here. You just have to pray the hours with us and get up when we get up and go to
bed
when
we get." Yeah, we've got some fairly strict.
And then eventually, there's some virtue that gets built, and they're more prepared to go back out into the world and find their way if they so choose. Whereas now it's like, why don't you come into our fentanyl camp and all day you can smoke as much fentanyl as you want. You don't even have to shave your head. It's like, well, that doesn't instill any virtue.
I met a guy in Pittsburgh who was homeless and just cause I was like new in America and I was stumbling around and I've actually bummed a cigarette off of him. I didn't realize he was without a home and he was staying in a shelter and we sat together and I tried to like find a monastery that had, you know, they like offered hospitality to people because he was saying he didn't want to go back to the shelter. It was like, it stinks. Mm. And it is like, yeah, the secular homelessness take you in type thing. Like it doesn't seem like there's an overall sense there of mission and like teleological end to what they're for. It's like, you need a bed now and we have real, you know, the state doesn't have a life plan to give anybody. It resists the thought that
it's a
you
management,
have to pursue happiness. Yeah. It doesn't have an idea for your human happiness in a way that a monastery says, there's God, everything is ordered to that.
Yeah. I was having a conversation about this on X today about the UN released this study that said we could feed everyone in the world for $40 billion a year. And I was like, that is either completely wrong, like way off base,
there's no way.
Or it is a scandal that we haven't ended world hunger yet. Because
that's how much it costs to feed blueberries to my son.
Little kids do like those blueberries, dude.
Special UN gruel. If we get the special UN gruel, we can.
That's what it is. It's like dehydrated, you know, dehydrated soy. That's what they'll send to everyone in Africa.
Like MREs made from Chinese slaves is what they do.
And old Nike shoes.
Yeah,
newspapers. It's like, yeah, it is a scandal. Obviously, it's a scandal because we have the food. Like, I don't think mass starvation events were, they've not been historically, like in China, they weren't common until Mao's famine. I don't think in Europe there were mass, like you don't get to have the biggest population in the world at like whatever era it was, like, you know, and they had so many people. If you look at those things, it's like Europe had 5 times the population of Africa in 1920 or something. Like, we could feed people. We knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. We had a system.
Figure it out,
Sorry. Well, I'm sorry. It was meant to be a positive thing about the special, and I've dragged it into this. So I apologize.
No, that's okay.
I'm not promoting Will.
No, I'll ask you this question. I'll kind of pivot because it seems to me, you know, I listened to your special today. You should go. What's the easiest way for people to get it? By the way, go to your website
it's on Matt and Shane's Secret Podcast YouTube channel.
It's on the YouTube. Channel. If you type in James McCann, Hey America. There you go.
Type that in the Google bar.
We'll put it in the description of this episode as well.
There we go. Yeah. I listened today, and like the way you're talking about the homelessness crisis in the special is very, like, you know, you're making jokes. It's you're not treating it lightly. And the way you're thinking about it here, you've obviously given serious thought to that. How does your brain switch? This is a selfish question. From serious mode to I'm going to joke about the thing to communicate my thoughts.
This is great. James, let me give you some context. Patrick, so we're trying to have a comedy podcast here. We try to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But in the last like 6 months, no, this is not your fault. But Patrick has been very, you can see he's got the button down shirt. He's got 50,000 followers on X now. He's completely stopped being funny because he's so engaged in the issues. And yeah, so any advice you can give him so we can pull funny Pat back out of him.
Give yourself really over to the grift. Feel yourself in the grift. You become a button down Halo app.
Ever since Michael Knowles followed him on Twitter, it's just been downhill.
You're a changed man. Let's get you on that nice chat show with all the prostitutes and the men who hate women talking at the table.
Yes.
I don't want to be in that room. I don't want my children to see me in that room. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be in a room surrounded by.
I genuinely think I'd do very well sitting with the prostitutes and kind of taking their stance. I think that would be really fun to just have like three prostitutes and then
me
on one side.
Hottest internet prostitutes. Yes, absolutely. No, this is
because the guys on the other side are jerks. The guys on the other side are jerks. So it's like you guys are claiming this like Christian approach to women's issues, but you're assholes and you're not actually helping anybody with anything. So it's like I kind of want to side with the prostitutes on this one.
Yeah,
you know,
you're 30, she's 12. You know, she obviously she's made her own choices, but she's been you know bogged down by this. You're choosing to do this.
I think this with the trans people all the time, like all these people going like, well, actually, trans is a mental illness. We hate them, and it's like, well, why do you? Okay, but like, if you're putting it in the category of schizophrenia, you shouldn't be like, you're awful. And we want to put you. It's like we want help and treatment and support for. Like, you don't take a person who's depressed and suicidal and say. You're an evil. You know. Treat them like an evil, malicious person. No, I don't. I mean, how do we get funny?
How do we get Patrick funny?
How do you switch from serious to funny?
I don't. I boil it down. I think funny is just like the reduced. If you take a serious thing down to its barest components and suck the fat out of it, which is sort of what stand-up comedy is like getting in. Punchline to punchline in the shortest number of words. That's not all comedy, but that's like a big part of it. I think what you're left with at some point of simmering down the idea is like something funny. Like in the way that, I don't know. Like I was like St. Augustine is funny all the time. Like every page, there's a joke. And Thomas Aquinas is just almost never funny. And sometimes it'll be the same. You know what I mean? Like there's just, if you reduce it, I think, brevity is the source of wit, is the short, funny way of saying that. But I think that's but it's hard because if you have to have that much content and that many issues and take like, you know, go into detail and not just get to do all the flourishes, I imagine you'd get terribly bogged down. But it seems to be working. I mean, maybe there's enough comedians out there and you got to be serious in the culture war.
This is selfish for me because I'm trying to joke and laugh and have fun, and I can't. Patrick is bogging me down with all this bloviating, and so I'm trying to get him to stop bloviating and try to start.
I'm bloviating.
I got to suck your fat is
where
what
the money is.
What it sounds like.
We got a huge number of absolutely humorless, puritanical tradcaths out there who have to be appealed to with the driest and least. You know what I mean? Like they don't want razzle.
I know exactly what you mean.
There's enough razzle dazzle in the culture. We got to give them dry. It's dry o'clock. We've had the fun Trump years. Now it's time for the tedious, working through the issues, actual governing Trump years. I believe.
It does feel that way. It does feel that way. I think I was a bad youth minister because I was the wrong mix of serious and funny. I would have been a good high school theology teacher. You know, I'm like 90% boring, 10% funny.
Yeah,
and I had to force myself to be fun for most of youth group and boring for only 10% of it. I had to, you know, and so that's the podcast is suffering from the same problem where, you know, when we were in college and I had not nary a care in the world, but now I have, you know, I don't
you
have
got
one
bills.
That's actually my problem. I don't have one.
Yeah.
I would like one.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Being self-employed, as you fellas both know, is kind of a tough.
My insurance runs out at some point, and I don't know what to do. No, but I'll figure it out.
We'll get you insurance.
It's asking if I'm.
I got a guy. I got a guy for you.
Hold on, give me one second. We'll connect you. I am having. Yeah. I just like.
Boy, am I.
Yeah, no, sorry, it's saying on the screen. You're in the show. I wonder if I, like, don't look at the... Can you still hear and see me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you look
okay,
great.
Okay, but it's helped the audio not at all. To click off into a new tab.
Bummer.
I mean, do we not have too much entertainment already? Is now not... Is the cool, funny move now not to stop being funny? Like, it's over. The humor, that's where it's got us. And, you know, that was a moment in time where that was necessary. And now it's... Genuinely, these are the serious, difficult years. Mm. I'm sorry to jump in on this side because it is a comedy podcast.
This is the hard times create hard men create good times. That's where we're at right now.
We're hard men now.
We are the hard men.
It is funny because it does feel like it's an investment banker being like, "Now is not the time to invest your money. Now, you know, everybody step back. I'm going to keep staying in the markets and make billions, but you guys." Go in for gold is kind of what it feels like you're telling us at the moment.
No, I just feel like I want to, it's been very weird having all the orthodoxies for the last 15 years, like flip on their head. You know, like that, the woke thing feels super done and the left in America isn't even going to try and push it. Like it's, I think I don't want to like celebrate before reaching the finish line here, but I think it's over. And certainly like, the old own the libs thing. Like, why? What power do they have left? They barely even have a TV station anymore. What libs do? Like, they've got academia, but...
But that's the most boring one.
Yeah,
that's
I don't want to...
That's the most boring one.
That's where they retreat to. That's their citadel. That's the wall that they fall back behind.
That's the Mott. That's the Mott, not the Bailey. You know,
it's absolutely too boring to get in there.
Yeah, the Mott and the Bailey.
Look, I don't know anything about Mott. Hold on.
The Mott and Bailey is a defense structure where you have a you have like the ideal land in front, and then you have like the gross disgusting structure in the middle, and people use it as like an argument thing where it's like, oh, you're saying like the thing you want to say is that Catholics worship Mary, right? You want to say Catholics actually worship Mary, but then when pressed on it, you're like, oh, well, you know, God doesn't want you to have statues. So that's two different things, but you're retreating into something that's easier to defend, but you really want to push the more fun thing out. It's a bad example, but that's what a Mott and Bailey is, an argument.
I can see, if you're doing that a lot, I can see where the humor is disappearing immediately. Because you want to have the, what is it? All the fun is in the Mott. And you're being serious.
This is a great time for him to freeze out when he's bringing up the point that proves you right.
Yes. Yeah.
Am I back?
What can you do?
You're back.
You froze as you were confirming my opinion on this topic.
I'll allow.
Patrick, appreciate it.
Do I have to move towards the internet? What is... I hate the internet. I hate it. Yeah. I like that it...
This brutal. Is... I was hoping... Because the last time we spoke with you, you hadn't... I think you had just gone on Kill Tony for the first time, but it hadn't even aired yet. So I was hoping that this time, it's like, got all that flowing in. The internet's going to be nice and crisp. New house in Austin. None of that. None of that has happened.
I've been thinking a lot about our station and what we deserve.
Sure.
As that becomes a possibility that I might one day have enough money to like not be having a panic attack. Well, a boat as well.
Well.
James on Force McCann, catamaran plan. Get on. But like, so we moved to a bigger house. It's not like an opulent mansion. It's got a second story and the bedrooms are a bit bigger. And everyone's calm and the children aren't like screaming. And I realize it's like, yeah, there is. It was bad before. Like, it was. Children need space, and we are owed that. And to not have that is disgraceful, and that we're being denied. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, not everybody needs a Rolls Royce, but a child needs enough room to play. Like, you can see it in the mood. Like, it's very obvious architecturally when people are going literally mad because they have no regulatory systems and no space. So that's been... To see that some of my problems were architectural rather than just, like, mental illness is wonderful.
SSRIs? No, we just need a fourth bedroom. That's what we need at this whole time.
Yeah, floor, just like a yard.
Instead of spending money on psychiatric drugs, just you know, add a balcony, you know, over the
get yourself
carport.
A sunroom. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
We have the opposite problem at the moment, where I feel like our house is almost too big for what we need, because we bought it assuming that we were going to be here for a really long time, and that's starting to be the case where I don't think we're going to be here for a really long time. Mm. And so now my wife and I are looking at homes where it's like we could severely downsize and save a lot of money every single month, and kind of the opposite of the experience that you're having, where it's like we need to be okay with a lot less, because now that we've had a bigger house, it's like, well, it's easy to just get very comfortable, you know, the nice new bathroom and like the non-drafty windows, you know, it would be very hard to move to a house with single pane windows, but that looks like, you know, it's where we're heading. You know, and that's okay.
That is okay.
Yeah.
More than one.
We'll get there.
Like, but on a city plan level as well, of like, just what's been denied us, and what's been done to us with the car, and like having an ugly small.
I want a beautiful car, and I want to drive down a beautiful main street that has beautiful buildings. And I want to drive to the lake. And
I want a church that's walkable from my house and a park.
Oh, can I tell you a big spiritual is maybe the wrong term, but like a liturgical breakthrough that's happened to me recently. Because the nearest church to us is the Maronite one. And we were going to the Hispanic church, and they were very nice people, but it was aesthetically a difficult, you know, it was a very groovy priest. A lot of slap and five. And some of the music I found challenging. Again, lovely, lovely people. But we were like, we went to the English language mass, and that's the Hispanics who weren't having a ton of kids. So there weren't that like many kids there either. We're going to the Lebanese now. It's so great. The Eastern Rite is
They're cool.
Three thumbs up. It's so beautiful. I get it.
I love that. It's that. That's the Maronites, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I gotta close this
vent real quick. Hold on.
I went to he does that sometimes, just gives a
it's too hot in this closet. I'm in a closet with no ventilation except this hot air that's blowing right on my head. I'm sweating like a hog in August.
You're wearing it well.
Thank you.
I walked into one of those churches randomly one time, and I was like, oh wow, it sounds very like Muslim. And they're like, hey, no, they sound like us. We were first. I was like, that's crazy. That's crazy that you're older than a world. It's like, you guys are older than a world religion. That's wild. I guess we are too, but like not in the same way, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, we have the oldest.
It'd be funny if there was a bunch of, it was an Islamic sect that had a bunch of music that sounded like Marty Haugen. You know,
at our diocesan appeal video this year, they were like your dollar goes to helping the kids and the arts in our schools, and it had a bunch of kids that were singing "Here I Am to Worship Here," and I was like, can I take money back? Can I withdraw? Can I actually take that money away from you? Because I don't necessarily want our kids to be singing that in a full choir.
Yeah,
it's not a great song, and kids singing is difficult to deal with as it is.
We have to wait until so many people die before.
I know, it's so bad, it's so hard, but you're right. It's like a
genocide by inaction is what we really need.
Just like lovingly run down the clock.
Yeah,
yeah, just kind of wait it out.
Yeah.
And by the way,
the passage of time, euthanize.
We're praying for the Holy Father at the moment. This is a slightly separate note. But I just went on another podcast. I went on the Matt and Shane podcast, and we looked at pictures of where Pope Francis is at.
Oh, yeah. He's not looking good.
It's not looking good. So pray for him. I haven't actually. Look, this is not tied to Francis, because may he live for a long, 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 long time. Longer to come. But I haven't been a Catholic for a conclave. Francis was the Pope when I became a Catholic.
Yeah.
So it was really exciting when I was a sophomore in high school, you know.
There was a lot of let's just say premature canonization of Francis in that first couple of years. I remember the Franciscan University Franciscan University was selling like t-shirts that had Pope Francis surrounded by a bunch of multi-ethnic and differently abled people that said love like Francis, which is crazy because no one knew who he was until
they made him a Marvel character right away.
They wanted their own Obama. It was the church's Obama.
Yeah, yes, Argentinian Obama.
We were right there in the middle of the Obama era. Everything was great. Everyone
I was on Reddit there. In high school, and it was, you know, you're going through Reddit like you do in the r/all, and every post about the Pope, the top comment would be, I really like this new Pope. And I was just like seething, and I didn't understand why, but that's the exact reason, is because they had elevated him to something that I knew that he wasn't. And it didn't stop from there.
And they were being unnecessarily mean to Benedict, just because it's not his fault he looks like Palpatine. That's not his fault. He was alive before that movie.
Hey, it turns out they all start looking like Palpatine eventually. If you're there long enough, like, no one looks great as they approach 90. Who?
Except for my beautiful wife.
I remember John Paul II being off. Statistically, you'll be dead by the time she's getting there.
That's true.
I tell my wife that all the time. don't worry, I'll be long dead. Yeah, no, it's not his fault he looks like Palpatine, but you should look at him when he was younger. He was a stone cold killer, Pope Benedict XVI. Not Francis,
all,
though. I don't think
they
Francis.
Looked handsome when they were young.
They really
I don't
did.
Think Francis looked handsome when he was young. Far be it from me.
He had those big ears, fine. Which kind of makes it tough.
He looked fine. He just looks like the, you know, but it looks like he's doing an arts degree. Yeah, all right, not as I mean JP too, obviously best looking young
hands
guy.
hands down. I think so. To your point, I don't think that Francis's death will do anything to the movement, the charismatic movement or the cringe movement in the US, because it was happening before he was Pope. I think the deaths are more an American one. Like I asked my music director, because the music director at our church is like, he's like, he set up a Scola. And he did some classically written hymns, and he's like an organist. And I was, and he's like, he's 50, he's 50 or 60. And so he's not young, but he's not the young trad by any means. And I asked him, I was like, why are we playing Taste and See? Like, why are you choosing these songs? I know you. Why are you? And he's like, because if I don't play them, people will get mad and complain. Mm. And I'm like, really? Who's like walking to mass going, I hope they play Table of Plenty, but they're here, they're around.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
I think we have
on
to,
Eagles wings, etc.
Well, I once said to a friend, people are really connected. I specifically on Eagles wings, I complained about to a friend once who I thought would be sympathetic to it, and the friend said, you know, they played that at my dad's funeral. Like, it's a beautiful song to me, and it's like okay. But I think separate to that experience, I don't think it is. But like you when you become enculturated into the boomer music, it's the boomer right, you know? It's like
I specifically brought that song up because Ethan has a connection to it. Sorry, that was an inside joke.
Well, you had a crack,
but it's a good example. It's a good example of that phenomenon, because it's like you have this connection to this song, even though it's objectively speaking not the greatest song in the world. But you have connections to it because it's part of your tradition.
It's like loving all of the Christmas music that was written by Jews in the 1950s, you know?
Yeah, come.
It's difficult because like the council was them like changing tradition and getting rid of tradition, and then waiting 60 years until the tradition is now different, and now we can't do the same thing. If we were to do the same thing, it would have the exact same effect, where people would be like, "Ah, you took our traditions away." And so I think we just, you know,
It's hard to go back.
You got to let it build.
You got to give the boomers credit, though, because they did rip everything apart and then build something new. All we've been able to do is say, we want it how it was before. We haven't created anything, you know?
Yeah.
So you got to give them a little bit of credit. It'd be different if we were here and we were ripping up what they were doing and we were writing new hymns, you know, in the old style. Nobody's
genuinely a problem? Is that we're not?
I wrote a hymn. Hold on.
Wait, Patrick, you wrote a hymn. That's very nice.
But they played it at my church. They wrote a hymn and they played it at Sunday Mass twice in the last month. It was great.
Nice. That's what we have to be doing.
Like, we need more of it.
Fire with fire.
People were like, Patrick, you wrote that? I was like, yeah, you We need to have more people.
You can just do things.
We need to have more people. You can just do things. You can send it to your music director and say, hey, can you play this? And he'll
We've started podcasts instead of writing beautiful liturgical music, which is great. But I don't know how much it's
so easy to write hymns. They have.
But it's so easy to start a podcast. Also,
if you even find ten good men, I will not blow up Sodom and Gomorrah. Ten good men in Sodom and Gomorrah.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
That could be a good
one. This is actually solid. We should. It's a good song. You're a poet, James. Have you ever written a hymn before, or a poem that's in 8/8/8?
I wanted to write a mass. I thought that would be fun.
We should do a John Williams mass setting.
Oh man, have you heard the Bernstein mass?
No.
It's
really bad. spare yourself. Although I will say, there's another one. There's like, who is it? Who did Phantom of the Opera?
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I believe there's an Andrew Lloyd Webber mass that actually has some.
He also designed those houses.
What?
Frank Lloyd Wright. He does that all the time, specifically with Frank Lloyd Wright.
Just a little bit of comedy for the show, Patrick. Just trying to keep the mood light.
I am the straight man now. There's a
nice Kyrie Eleison section in Andrew Lloyd Webber's Requiem Mass from 85 that I do recommend.
I bet that's fun.
Kyrie Eleison. Kyrie Eleison.
Oh, no.
I think we've done that in Mass before. What happened? That sounds familiar.
Kyrie Eleison. We did it in Boys Choir.
I love. Have you ever done, Ethan? Did you do Marriage Encounter, or do you know what Marriage Encounter is, James? It's like
I did a marriage retreat before I got married. I don't know if it was Marriage Encounter, but they told
marriage
me about
encounter.
That I should invest in stocks, and then they also said to go to confession, and that was
that's
pretty
good.
Much
we
it.
Didn't get that at Marriage Encounter.
That was
but,
good. Yeah.
Marriage Encounter is like this worldwide movement from around the 60s or 70s about like renewing marriage. I think it was like after divorce started getting more popular, started renewing marriage. And it is very much a product of its time. Like the book has not changed since 1960. And I know that because my grandfather had his conversion experience on a marriage encounter. And there's a book that said, God doesn't make junk. And it was actually a beautiful moment because I like read this line and I was like, oh my gosh, my grandfather read this 45 years ago and that's why he's Catholic, because he used to say it all the time. Anyway, I digress. Yeah. But there's a whole section, there's a whole like evening in the retreat where they talk about the Man of La Mancha, like the musical Man of La Mancha, which apparently in the 60s, in that time period when this retreat was being written, was like the biggest deal on the planet. Like, they had us listen to Impossible Dream from Man of La Mancha and talk about how man like reaches the stars. And having read Don Quixote, I was like, this is really silly. It's really funny to idealize this guy.
Ooh, there was a version in 2019 where Kelsey Grammer played Don Quixote.
Oh, that would be good. I'd see that.
He would be such a fine Quixote.
But this was like the Hamilton of the 1970s, this musical. Like, people loved it. They loved it.
I think I could be Rocinante.
I think the horse tap dance.
I saw you as an excellent Sancho Panza.
I was going to recommend you for Sancho Panza, James.
All right,
you've got sort of a guy who looks like he's been tossed in a blanket energy.
Thank you. I only know. Actually, I never read Don Quixote. I bought it and I thought, you know, like, this is important for Western literature. And then I started.
No,
and I was
you don't
like,
have to.
Ah,
read it.
Kind of a,
get the Lathrop, Tom Lathrop translation. Super serious. It retained, like, it's Most Don Quixote translations are boring and dumb because they think they know better than the author. They're like, oh, this idiot forgot a couple of chapters, or he knew what he was doing. All right, he wrote this big. He's making jokes. All right, Tom Lathrop keeps the comedy in it, so you'd appreciate it. It's a pretty recent translation too.
I just finished The Sun Also Rises, which I am told you all have to read in high school.
Such a good book.
I loved it.
Hemingway.
Yeah,
we did a podcast about it, Patrick.
Did we?
Yes. Well, I told you about it.
Was it like you read a chapter and you were?
No, I read the whole thing. I read the whole thing. James, tell me what you thought.
Chapter. James, tell us.
I love it. It's about a man whose penis doesn't work, and his just penis doesn't work for the full book, and then the book's over.
The sun also rises, but
it never comes back. Yeah.
Yeah. I was shocked by how I didn't realize that. Hemingway was Catholic, and it's a very Catholic, like, it's the Catholicism is to the side. I've talked about it on three podcasts this week, so I don't want to just say the same things over and over again. But I don't think I talked.
People who are looking you up after the special are like, this guy really liked
this guy really Christ. Loves
this
Hemingway.
Guy's read one book, but the Catholicism is like very. It's always nearby, and in that Hemingway way, he doesn't really talk about it, but like occasionally the character, you know. There was one description that really moved me that I would find and read.
Hold on. Go get it. It'd be worth it.
Yeah, we got time.
We got nothing but time. I hope he stays. We do the bonus podcast with him too.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be
fun. Oh, it was so close by.
Yeah, he's right there. We just say, oh, I hope I have time to go get it. It's 2 feet away.
But it's the finding it that I worry about.
You didn't highlight it?
We should get James on the book cast with me.
We should get James on. We're going to start a book cast and a movie cast, James, for our patrons.
James, I'm going to pay James to do a dramatic reading of the Odyssey or something. It'll be like very loud.
That weird is DEI that movie?
Nolan.
Hold on. It's like, if I look on it, if I look it up on the internet, it might be faster to find than trying to look here. But he's like, it's just him in a church. Feeling like a really bad Catholic, and like being like, oh, I'll never be a good Catholic. But there we go. And it's like, man, what a good religion. Ah, it's a pity I'm such a worthless piece of dirt. It's like, talk amongst yourselves. Hold on.
All right. I'm more and more invested in this piece.
The Sun Also Rises is a novel rich with elements of Catholicism, which are woven into Jake Barnes's pilgrimage. These religious connections are often acknowledged, but not fully discussed in recent research.
You ChatGPT'd it.
No, this is a Georgia Southern University thesis.
Oh gosh, page that's bleak.
From spring of 2015.
Oh, that is bleak.
Many scholars are in agreement that Jake's pilgrimage begins with the desire for understanding and meaning. Climaxes at the bullfight. I'll tell you what.
Okay. All right.
Just a little bit of crass humor, and ultimately resolves in a spiritual rebirth at San Sebastian. But none have explored the connection to St. Peter, an iconic figure who has been overlooked with regard to the pilgrimage. This is what Sheila Nielsen has to say about The Sun Also Rises.
Turn that here. I think she's stretching the analogy, but... Oh, come on, Jimmy!
Does anyone call you Jimmy, except for yourself in moments
only
of frustration?
When I'm very angry with myself.
Okay. Yeah, or podcasting alone in a Volvo.
Toyota now moving down.
In America, Toyota's up from a Volvo.
That's the out of the three Axis powers. That's number two in terms of cars. You ever think about that? How all of our foreigns come from the World War II bad guys?
They had a lot of experience making engines for a certain period of time in the 20th century.
They were very
good at it.
If only they were better at spying, they would have won the
don't
war.
Look up what Volkswagen was doing in 1939.
I found it.
You found it.
I found it. All right. At the end of the street, I saw the cathedral and walked up toward it. The first time I ever saw it, I thought the facade was ugly, but I liked it now. I went inside. It was dim and dark, and the pillars went high up, and there were people praying, and it smelt of incense, and there were some wonderful big windows. I knelt and started to pray and prayed for everybody I thought of, Brett and Mike and Bill and Robert Kahn and myself and the bullfighters, and separately for the ones I liked. And lumping all the rest, I then prayed for myself again. And while I was praying for myself, I found I was getting sleepy. So I prayed that the bullfights would be good and that it would be a fine fiesta and that we would get some fishing. I wondered if there was anything else I might pray for, and I thought I would like to have some money. So I prayed that I would make a lot of money. And then I started to think how I would make it. And thinking of making money reminded me of the Count, and I started wondering about where he was and regretting I hadn't seen him since that night in Montmere, and about something funny Brett told me about him. And all the time, I was kneeling with my forehead on the wood in front of me and was thinking of myself as praying. I was a little ashamed and regretted that I was such a rotten Catholic, but I realized there was nothing I could do about it, at least for a while, and maybe never. But that, anyway, it was a grand religion, and I only wished I felt religious, and maybe I would the next time. And then I was out in the hot sun on the steps of the cathedral, and the foreigners and the thumb of my right hand was still damp, and I felt them dry in the sun. The sunlight was hot and hard, and I crossed over beside some buildings and walked back alongside the streets of the hotel. I was so moved by so many things in that, but one, the one I most liked... Sorry, one I most liked is, like, he doesn't describe, like, crossing himself or the holy water, but he just mentions that by the time he's out, the forefingers and thumb of the right hand are damp. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know he's done that, but the memory that he has of it is, like, having the holy water on his fingers and feeling them dry in the sun, which is a feeling that I've never heard described in fiction before.
This, to me, when I made that tweet about Shane Gillis and Catholicism, this is a more elegant way of describing it. This idea of someone going to church to pray for their sports team to succeed or his bullfighters to win. It's like this beautiful, it's simple, more, but like there's this yearning that isn't anywhere else. Like nobody goes to a Protestant church to kneel and like beg God for various things and then leaves. It's always in a Catholic church because there's something drawing people there, you know? And it's like, it's just so clear and so obvious that there's something real here that people want, but they can't get all the way there, you know?
That symbol specifically reminded me of something that I read about. So I read through the Dante's Purgatorio recently, and I was reading like the introduction, and he said, I'm gonna reach through the screen and I'm gonna beat you up. And then I'm gonna be in the freaking eighth circle for wrath, baby.
You will, you will. I'm in the eighth circle for sloth, so it's fine.
He talks about how Dante likes to use like little parts to describe the whole. And so there's like this one line at the beginning where he's running up the hill, and it says that like the front foot was always higher than the lower one, like describing how fast he's running. That like image of the holy water being on his fingers, like, is it like a symbolic of himself? And it's like it felt almost Dantean, the description of like the water is like, the water is the grace that God poured on him in that moment, but it's like drying out as he leaves the cathedral. That's why he's describing, that's why that moment almost, like, that's just my read of it. Well, maybe I'm being too much of an English teacher
but I also like, no, he doesn't even think, like, so ingrained is the crossing himself.
Is the crossing,
He doesn't think, oh, I better go and cross. It's just like, that's the thing that happens when you leave.
It's just what
so
you
that
do.
This character, like, even though in cerebral ways he feels distant from it, like, he feels thanks at when he goes, like, what a grand religion. What a beautiful wind. Like, he is experiencing wonder and thanks. Like, even as he's approaching, I should have something to pray about. By accident, he gets the gifts around that. And by being brought into the ritual, he gets that moment of, like, you know, feeling the water dry on his hand. And like, what could that mean? Was it about something? But it's like, you have to do it. You have to be in it. And then it's like, within that contemplative mode, the graces that are given are strange and spontaneous and might not come in the direction that you think they're going to come from. And that you can't, if you only have, sorry, say it again.
I was like, perhaps there is no difference between seriousness and humor. Perhaps all of these things are both very serious and very funny at the same time.
That which is truly funny must be serious, or if it's just silly frippery and disgusting. I do believe.
Seinfeldian.
No, Seinfeld's very serious.
Is he?
What do you mean? What are you talking about? Seinfeld isn't serious. What are you smoking weed?
The one quote that just popped into my brain when I was driving over and thinking about being funny was him like, I don't find forks very funny, but I find spoons funny. I was like, it's just a silly thing to say. But I have
that's
heard
funny.
You say, I have heard you say things about Seinfeld about like he gets very angry about things that are he's not just a flippant comedian like, oh, you ever notice airline food? Like he has serious opinions about rental cars and how a reservation should mean that you have the car.
I don't know how much of it is like his fault or like something that he's worked for, and how much is just he's blessed with this, for me at least, like an air that there's something behind what he's talking about, that he's actually, there's an incredible darkness that he's confronting by looking at a chip packet. Like it feels like there's some huge weight of the world and terror and despair. That he's
it's those memes of like the tiny knight holding the sword and the giant, and it's Jerry Seinfeld and just like things that exist. Yeah. And he's just opposed fundamentally to nonsense. You know, he just wants things to make sense at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Like he has this desire for truth, even if it's like weird and distorted and, you know, confused. He still wants it to be true. He wants it to be cohesive. That's the fundamental thing that he's driving at.
And that, like, there's a, you never really feel like he's satisfied or like at rest. There's like a very earnest agitation. I see, like a real, like, he sees that there is a problem. Like, we're in a fallen world, and we shouldn't be. Like, and even down to the smallest, most silly thing, everything is wrong, and he's terrified by that. Like, it's the opposite to an advertisement. Like an advertisement goes, this little thing is right and good and it makes you happy. And Seinfeld is like walking through the world going, everything is wrong. Everything is bad. Why can't it be good? It should be good. I have good inside of me that I see it should be.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably being guilty of the same reason why people hate the Beatles. Like they're just, you know, transcendently successful. So it's easy to swipe up at them. But I think one thing I have heard from Seinfeld, and I don't know how true this is, but he said that if you play laughter from one of his shows, he can tell you what joke he said because he's everything's drilled down. I think that shows that at least his jokes are enduring in that they last beyond the moment that they happen. And I see a lot of comics now are like the stuff that pops up on my For You page. It's just like, oh, this person yelled out a slur and I responded to them. And it's like only funny in that moment. Yeah. And then it ceases to be funny afterwards. It's not enduring.
Well, this is what, I mean, it's very hard to tell what is forever and what is like hackneyed. But there are certain words you can it's funny. There was like, there's a joke I've got about a farmer's market that I'm working on at the moment. And I did it at like an ulti room. And one of the things is like an observation that there's like a lot of lesbians there. And it felt like that was like enduring at a room where people didn't want me to say that because I have to say it in a certain way that it's like why are you even bringing up that there are lesbians there? Why is that? It's nothing. But when I play like a clubby thing, you just go, a lot of lesbians are there. You know, people just go, he said lesbian.
Yeah.
You know? And that's so cheap and dumb. Like something about resistance allowing you to do something good. But it's always funny to me when like, a pop star had like 5 number one hits and one of them is like the first one's memorable and no one at the time could tell, man, the rest of these songs were terrible. And then you like hear them on oldies radio and you go, there was nothing in that. Like, that's what we all want, right? We all want to make something that lasts. Mm-hmm. It feels more good and durable, but just to, what is, everything, it's so cheap. Everything is cheap and weak and dumb. Excuse me.
That's why we should have kids, because those are truly the only things that last.
Well, they last a while and then they die. They too die.
That's true. Preferably after you. So you don't have to like see it. Yeah.
It's fingers crossed. But like this, I guess that's like, it's one of the things we like about God is that he's eternal. Like if God only lasted for a while, it would be a waste of time. And that, like, empires fall. Like, an empire is not worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
This particular king, kingship in general might be worth your time, but this particular king is probably not worth. I don't know. I'm sorry. It's been one of those days. I've been feeling.
I like this, James. Oh, go ahead. What was that? A friend did what?
No, it was a friend died. Keep going. A friend died yesterday.
Oh my god,
it was terrible. I was a wonderful woman who was in the art scene in Adelaide and was like very supportive of everybody, like the sweetest woman. And I keep forgetting. Like I keep going. Why am I having this incredible sense of dread and pain? And I remember, like, you found out a friend died yesterday. It's funny, like you get distracted with your day for a little bit because I didn't know her. I knew her. I thought about this when someone dies and you really like them and you're fairly close, and you like write to their partner and you write them like a message being like, "I'm so sorry, this is terrible." You know, it's just something entirely inadequate, but you send them. But if you're in that immediate first ring of like seeing them all the time, you don't write that message. You call and you go, "Shit, I'm coming over." Right. Like, you don't have to it's like a mask off grieving of like, it's almost not funny, but like this is the intimacy that allows you to go, I don't care how I'm coming across in this moment. And I don't know where that was going, because I'm in a spiral of feeling sad about it.
I don't know if you're a listen to music when you're sad guy, but a song that a friend gave to me when my grandfather died, it was a little like in terms of expression of grief, it was a little bit lower than grandfather passing away, but
yeah,
it was it's called, have you heard the song Fire and Rain?
By James Taylor.
It's a very good song that he wrote. It's a very good song that he wrote after he was in a similar situation where he found out that a friend, like an old friend, passed. And it's a beautiful song that, like, it's a song that's written to her. And from what you can tell, she wasn't like she was a big part of his life, but it's about like the main refrain that he keeps saying. And he's like, I've seen all these things in my life, but I always thought that I would see you again. You know, it seemed obvious that you would always be there, and I never thought that you'd be gone. It's so strange because I always thought I would see you again. And it was really helpful when my grandfather passed, because like that's how I felt with him. I was like, you know, I'm always going to go home and see my grandpa. Like, he's always going to be there. But it's strange, and it speaks to that loss of, like, we want people to be enduring, too. People ought, it's almost like we ought to be enduring and live forever, but we don't in this world, and yeah.
Well, it's so like, should be like, death is an imposition. I thought about that with, like, families and, like, family reunions when you're a child, and you go there in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in actuality, like, a lot of those people are going to get divorced or have a big fight and not want to see each other. But when you're a little kid, it's like, well, this is my family. I've seen movies. People have their families through life. It's like, no, like in a cosmopolitan world, you've got that for the time that you've got it. It's a very transient thing. Mm-hmm. Those bonds come loose. And it's like, it's wrong. It's like, we should have people with us all the time. Like,
But it's strange to read. I was reading classic books, but I was reading the Odyssey, and it talks about like Odysseus is offered immortality. He's like, oh, this is an unnatural thing for a man to live forever, and that's so wrong. That's just not true. It's a preternatural thing for a man to live forever. Like, it feels like he ought to live forever, but it's like, I guess in one sense it's unnatural, but in another sense it's a deeply natural thing to want to live forever.
Yeah, well, otherwise it wouldn't be appealing and it wouldn't be interesting for him to consider it. But like, it is unnatural in a fallen world. It is unnatural to continue on in like an unfallen state.
Yeah, what is there? There's a story in Greek mythology about a guy who's offered immortality but not agelessness, and he shrivels up and dies. Well, shrivels up and kind of just continues to exist as a grasshopper.
He just turns into a raisin. There's a raisin
in the sun that also rises.
In Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh seeks out, like, I think, an immortal man. And he's just, I think it's Gilgamesh. I might be getting this wrong. And the immortal guy is just like lying in the dirt. And he says, what's wrong? And he goes, I'm so bored and I can't die. I've been alive for so long. There are no new experiences for me. And this is like, for us to be immortal, like, it has to be in heaven, right? It has to be like some experiential thing that's so, like, if time becomes infinite, so too does the experience that engages us also have to become infinite, or else, you know, like the storybook version of heaven that we've got, where it's like, I'll be with my friends and I'll be in a nice house in the sky and the clouds walking around. It would be torture. It would be so awful
to just be that from. Maybe that guy
would.
It's
just
going to
be Instagram Reels forever. It's just going to be it's just constant Instagram Reels, and you never know when the next one's going to hit, and it's forever, and you just keep swiping.
Maybe that guy wouldn't be so bored if he was here to watch Captain America 4, Brave New World.
Maybe if we gave him a phone, he wouldn't be so mad.
What if Gilgamesh had iPad?
What if we gave Gilgamesh Happy Flappy Bird?
I think, man, I'm so happy that the Marvel thing is winding down.
Certainly.
It's so sick. It's taken so long. It's been forever.
The good thing, it's revealed to us that Harrison Ford will do anything for a dollar. You know, at least we know that about
him. It was so funny.
No, Harrison Ford. Okay. Because I fell into a big Wikipedia wormhole on Roman Polanski. And I think Harrison Ford might have, like, endangered his reputation to work with Roman Polanski. Like, he was one of the people who brought Roman Polanski back into the fold of acceptable people to work with. Which was, I'm not saying that was a good thing, but I think Harrison Ford, at very, obviously Roman Polanski, a lot of, the more I read about that, the more I go, oh, man.
I don't know.
Roman Polanski killed Margot Robbie.
Roman Polanski raped a 13-year-old girl in Jack Nicholson's hot tub after his wife was killed, and then fled America and has never come back.
Is he alive now?
Oh yeah, no, Harrison Ford worked with him. No, he's alive now. He went to France, and the French government was like, you had sex with a 13-year-old girl in Jack Nicholson's hot tub? That's normal. We've all done that. We're French.
That's good. Yeah, well, welcome to France. Stamp the
passport. Would you like to meet my transgendered wife? I'm just kidding. That's Emmanuel Macron.
Is he still making movies in France?
Yeah. Yeah, he made a movie about the Dreyfus Affair not long ago. And I'm sure they're great. He made The Pianist. Like 30 years after The Trouble, he got a standing ovation at the Oscars.
With Adrian Brody?
Yeah.
He froze.
Was that that's the drummer movie that you're thinking of?
No, you're thinking of Miles Teller, dog.
I don't know.
Are we back?
What did I say?
Yeah, we're back. Oh.
We're back. It's just weird. It's just like.
Oh, hold on. We're catching up.
James just did the VeggieTales lean in.
Larry the Cucumber looking ass. All right. Carry on. So Roman Polanski, you're researching him.
Man,
you're looking on
Wikipedia. Such a hard thing to talk about where there might be lag when I could be easily taken out of context by accident by the internet. But I just meant to say.
No, nobody's watching. Jake solace in the fact that nobody's watching this.
No, it's not true. It's not true.
Change.
This will be one of our best episodes on YouTube.
He did say that he just did Matt and Shane, so we're probably going to get some SEO boost from this week.
I'll be sharing.
Might get some SEO boost, but yeah. Oh, thank you.
How the tables have turned. You won't believe. You won't believe the boost I got from my first Crunch appearance. It was unbelievable.
Life is in my hands, little boys.
I would. That's Patrick. Did you see it? 18 minutes and 35 seconds. At the end of James's special?
No.
In little text at the very bottom, he said thank you to at least all the people in the crunch. It's like the second from the bottom. Yeah.
Whoa, that's awesome. I didn't read all those through.
Yeah. You also listed my name separate from the crunch, so unless you know a different Ethan, I got thanked twice.
That's my agent.
God damn it. I thought it was cool for a minute.
I did that. That's so great that I've been moving house. So yeah. I didn't remember who I thanked?
No, no, you included us.
Very kind. Thank you.
Well, it was one of the first times that I thought it was just heartening. It was heartening to know you were out there and you were doing what you were doing, and you've also been very, very kind to me. I think actually, no, I do remember writing it. I was in desperate poverty 1 year ago. I think that's not unfair to say, and your listeners. Yeah. Like, you put that out, that I was going through a really hard time, and someone sent me some money. It was not, like, an insane amount of money. It was several hundred dollars, I believe. And it allowed my wife to buy groceries when we otherwise could not buy groceries. And it, I cry when I think about it. Anyway, it was really, Like, it was like I could have left America, genuinely, if that hadn't happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was one of several breaking points where it's like, well, this is probably the week where it's over because I'm like, I have no job and I can't work other than as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And I live in Steubenville and I can't do any gigs. So this, what are we going to do? And I remember like sweet Mark Barnes at New Polity had said, you will write for New Polity. And I sat at my computer going like, I can write an article. I used to write articles. I can write an article again. And I could not. I wrote many things that were not articles. I just couldn't do, like, I didn't have it in.
I wrote
like,
conjunctions. I wrote adverbs. No articles.
I wrote like
indefinite. I couldn't
series
write
series of like haunting. What am I? What am I doing? You boys in the community that you've built. Anyway, it was real nice. I can't keep going on about it. Thank you and.
Please, no, it's our
well,
pleasure.
It's just when it comes time, when you've got the Netflix special and the money's pouring in,
when your teeth are gold, and
yeah,
you're...
just don't forget us. That's all. We just want you
like
on the podcast,
not like replaced, but like
we just want you on the podcast once or twice a year. That's all.
We've
got
to do it in the flesh. We've got to figure out. How
we
to
do.
Order.
Oh,
please,
it'd be so fun. It would be so good.
If you
don't understand the energy when we're together, it's electric. It's so fun.
If you book a joint show somewhere, I will fly in and do it. If you organize, you go, this is The Crunch, and James McCann will be there. I'll come. It can be either of your towns. Make it easy on yourself.
It'd be great. Yeah.
But I will do it. I said this before. I said this earlier on before I got very, very busy. Genuinely, if you book it, I will come.
We'll do it. We'll
this is like Field of Dreams, but for podcasting.
We have to do it. We should do it in Melbourne, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe. I think I'm more connected to the... I'm more connected to the local scene here than Ethan is in Oklahoma City, I would wager.
Yeah, it's because I never leave my house. What we should do is we should get James at the Napa Institute.
What's
get him in front of all the right-wing dark money.
The Napa Institute is where all the right-wing Catholics get together and EWTN tells them how they should support their latest project.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. But
that's part of it.
It
it's
is
not,
the,
not true.
It's a gathering of a lot of influential Catholic donors and special interests in
that wasn't
Napa
a slight
Valley, California.
EWTN, please don't.
Yeah, we don't want to do any slights. EWTN is a wonderful organization, and they should be doing a lot.
They should prop us up with right wing dark money.
They should absolutely. James already has that. He's already on the right. He's further ahead on the right wing dark money pipeline than we are.
Please, I did realize recently, like with these numbers the way they are.
Yeah.
One day soon, I could make a call to the Daily Wire and see what happens.
That day's probably like, today, actually.
I can't do it. I don't know why I
what
can't
do, you mean?
Do it. Isn't it weird?
Here.
Isn't it weird to go?
Can we, here, before I we, can't. Can we just time out real quick? Can we transition over to the bonus podcast so that we
all
can
right.
speak about your career freely? This is no longer public. Hey America on Matt and Shane's Secret Podcast.
Get on it.
We'll link in the description. James, you got anything else to say on the public show before we sign off?
I love America. I love everybody. I love you guys. James Donald Force McCann, Catamaran Plan. It still exists.
It's a good show.
It's
the Auto-Tune episode
show.
Was the greatest
the
episode
Auto-Tune,
that you've ever
the
Auto-Tune done.
The Auto-Tune episode was so good. I kept, yeah, please.
Do another Auto-Tune
episode,
please.
You can't
please.
Do it again.
You can't do it again, but it was so funny.
I can incorporate it.
It was so good. Yeah,
I can do things like
we'll have segments. All right, well, if you guys want to listen to the rest of James's conversation with us and talk about comedy, about how he's evangelizing the gay, malnourished Tony Hinchcliffe, go over to patreon.com/thecrunch.
Can I say this?
I had
a chat with Tony last night, and I told him like the Catholics are reaching out to me at the moment about you. And he went, "Why?" I was like, "You have like on a gut level your anti-euthanasia stance." They love. They can't believe.
Yeah.
You're popping off about euthanasia. He was like,
that was amazing when he
crazy.
Went off against that doctor.
They're killing people. It's like, yeah. It's just great. Thank you for having like that response. Because so many people, even like on the right, they have this like, oh, put a bullet in me when I'm done. You know, why is suffering? Suffering is pointless. And just on a gut level, he was like, that's gross.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the Aboriginal vicar of Christ
speaking through you, Tony. Tony Hinchcliffe's in the virtuous pagans level of hell. He's in limbo, absolutely.
Yeah.
I consider Tony a virtuous pagan.
Yeah. People go in Canada, they go to the doctor and they're like, kill me because I'm sad. And Tony goes, unbelievable.
It's not believable.
Kill Tony joke. You gotta watch Kill Tony Patrick.
Saying, I don't believe it.
I don't watch Kill Tony, but I will.
Well, it's unimportant. All right, we're going to go to patreon.com/thecrunch. This bonus episode, because it's James and because it's special, will be for the $5 a month patrons. So if you want to sign up for $5 a month on patreon.com/thecrunch, that's where we'll be. We'll see you next time.
Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.